Good morning, everyone. I'm going to ask our Marshal Miranda Johnson to call court to order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Slater, Judge Rodenberg, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding.
I'm apologizing to everyone. Whenever they start the recording, I get the recording notice that stays right dead center in the middle of my screen. So anyway, again, welcome to the Zoom platform of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is July 21st, 2021. We have three matters scheduled for oral case consideration, and we have a non-oral calendar as well. With that said, I'm going to ask our clerk to call the first case for hearing.
Calling case number A201639, Larson versus Commissioner of Public Safety.
Please remember, gentlemen, that you each have 15 minutes for presentation of your argument. As you note, the marshal does have a time clock in my upper left hand. It may be different on your screen. 5 minutes will be reserved to appellate counsel for rebuttal if you choose to use that. I also want to remind you the rules of appellate procedure remain in place, except you don't have to stand. If you feel more comfortable sitting, go ahead and do that. And finally, please state your name and who you're speaking on behalf of prior to beginning your argument. With that said, appellant counsel, you can proceed. And you're muted, just a reminder.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Greg Solomon, and I represent the appellate Robert Herman Larson. First, I will focus on the issue of whether Trooper Vatsas and/or Deputy Zerslip prevented or denied Robert Larson from obtaining a second or additional chemical test. The Court of Appeals wrote in Scholes v. Commissioner of Public Safety, 760 Northwest 2D 331 at page 335, quote, "Finally, a request for a test that is different from that which is offered by the peace officer in and of itself is not equivalent to a request for a test in addition to that which is offered by the peace officer," close quote. In the case at bar, we have significantly more than the mere request for a test that is different from that offered by Trooper Vatsas. We have
Mr. Solomon, that, you know, your problem on that issue is very hard for you to overcome, because we have a trial court judge, I don't recall who it was, Tricia Zimmer, in this case, who went so far as to make credibility findings as she believed what the officer said versus your client. So work us around that. How can we make a workaround when we have credibility findings?
Well, first of all, Judge Zimmer did not make a finding that Robert Larson testimony was not credible. The district court merely found that the testimony of Trooper Vatsas and Deputy Zerslip were credible. And in fact, the district court made a pretty plain error and clear error when it concluded at conclusion of law 10 of its order that Deputy Zerslip's testimony regarding Robert Larson's lack of a request for an additional test is credible and reliable. If please look at the entire testimony of Deputy Zerslip from page 50 through 55 of the transcript, Deputy Zerslip testified that he did not recall any of the specifics of Robert Larson in the DMT room on November 11th, 2019. Deputy Zerslip did not testify that Robert Larson did not request an additional test. and the respondent's brief at page 10 is misleading when it contends otherwise.
Mr. Solomon, just on that point, to clarify, though, isn't it true that that deputy did testify that in terms of the usual paperwork that would exist, that in other words, if there had been a request, I would give phone books, and there's nothing in the logs to show that. So isn't that what the reference the court is making to in that particular finding in conclusion 10?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I read it differently. Deputy Zerslip certainly testified as to general procedures he follows. He also testified that not necessarily would certain things show up in jail logs, but he certainly did testify as to general rules he follows. However, he didn't remember any of the specifics related to Robert Larson. So the Court of Appeals wrote in DeBoer v. Commissioner, 406 Northwest 2D 43 at page 46, all that an officer is required to do with a driver who is in custody and requests additional testing is to furnish the use of a telephone, close quote. This rule was violated by Trooper Vatsas and Deputy Zerslip. In DeBoer, the Court of Appeals also wrote at page 44, quote, the trial court found, ellipsis, the trooper explained DeBoer could arrange his own testing after completing the trooper's test, close quote. This did not happen in the case at bar. Trooper Vatsas did not explain to Robert Larson that he could arrange his own testing after completing the breath test. DeBoer is not factually similar to the case at bar. With that factual difference, the Court of Appeals in DeBoer correctly found that Dwayne DeBoer was not denied of his statutory right to obtain an additional test. Thiel v. Commissioner of Public Safety, 447.
Before you go into that, Mr. Solomon, just to clarify, and this maybe goes back to Judge Werke's original question. If I understand the record correctly, at no time did your client specifically say, I request an additional test. The recording ends, as I understand as well, at about the point he was asking about other tests. Isn't it still boiled down to a credibility finding based on all the evidence as to whether an additional or versus a separate type of test is being requested? The court made that finding. Wouldn't it be inappropriate for us to simply make a different finding than what the trial court did?
First of all, the record does include the testimony of Robert Larson that after he failed the DMT breath test, immediately after, he requested another test. Secondly,
before you go forward on that other test, and I want you to finish your answer, don't you have the burden of showing unequivocally that test was asked for? And here's what I'm getting at later during the scenario when the officer says, got to take a breath test, he says, do I have other options? And I thought that was maybe a good argument for you when he asked for other options. So how did he clarify back after the breath test that that's what he wanted? Second test, an alternative test. How does that play out?
Okay. Deputy Vatsas asked if Robert Larson would take a breath test. Robert Larson said, don't I have any other options? Okay. Shortly thereafter, the recording ends due to the error of Deputy Vet Sass and Deputy Zerslip. We don't get to hear Robert Larson consenting to the breath test. We don't get to hear him taking the breath test. We don't get to hear Deputy Zerlip tell him you failed. And we don't get to hear Robert Larson say at that time, I want an additional test. And we have the testimony of Robert Larson that Deputy Zerslip and Trooper Vet Sass did not respond to his request at that time. They just kind of looked the other way and said, well, we're going to book you now. Thiel v. Commissioner of Public Safety, 447 Northwest 2D 472, is similar to the case at bar. After Robert Larson failed the DMT breath test, he requested an additional chemical test. Robert Larson testified that Trooper Vet Sass and Deputy Zerslip did not respond to his request for an additional test. See the transcript at page 32. This is similar to the response of the peace officers in Thiel, where the female officer said, well, I guess you're SOL, close quote. And the male officer said, quote, forget it. They're all just sleeping, close quote. Just like the holding in Thiel, Robert Larson was prevented from obtaining an additional chemical test. The female and male officer in Thiel prevented Kenneth Thiel from using a telephone to try to set up an additional test. Trooper Vet Sass and Deputy Zerslip also prevented Robert Larson from using a telephone to set up an additional test.
Well, let me ask a question here. I'm looking at the district judge's findings, and she expressly recites that the appellant testified at the implied consent hearing exactly as you're describing his testimony. Then she went on to find, as a fact, it appears to me, that he did not, and this is finding 11G, that he did not request an additional test. So she heard his testimony and seems to have rejected it either expressly or implicitly. Doesn't your argument require that we assume or find that he did in fact request an additional test when the district court found otherwise?
If the court looks at finding 45, it reads the petitioner believes he made a request for an additional test after the implied consent recording ended. That relates to the finding number 11 that the court just cited to. Trooper Vet Sass and Deputy Zerslip failed to record the entire interaction between them and Robert Larson in the DMT room on November 11th, 2019. Please listen to Exhibit 2 at the end, the audio recording of the implied consent process. Had the trooper and the deputy recorded the entire transaction, there would be more proof that Robert Larson requested an additional chemical test after he failed the DMT breath test. Respondent's brief at page 11 misstates the facts of Prismis v. Commissioner of Public Safety 488 Northwest 2D 829. The two officers did not testify that Mr. Prismis never requested an additional test. Contrary to Prismis, the district court in the case at bar did not make an explicit finding or conclusion that Robert Larson's testimony was not credible. Now I'm going to focus on whether Trooper Vatsas had a reasonable or articulable suspicion for no seatbelt use by Robert Larson. Please view Exhibit 3, the video recording from Trooper Vatsas's vehicle. When Trooper Vatsas's vehicle and Robert Larson's vehicle met on Strong Street, Trooper Vatsas must look to his left to see if Robert Larson is wearing his seatbelt.
Is that the same problem with that portion of your argument that we have a judge that made credibility determinations? We have a situation where Larson was apparently evasive when he was asked, did you just put it on when you were stopped or you saw me? And he said he didn't know. I mean, these findings by the court I'm troubled with that because I don't know how we can work around that.
Okay. I'll grant the court that Mr. Larson was evasive. I do not believe that the court made credibility findings with regard to the stop of Mr. Larson's vehicle.
Before you go further, I asked that question right when the time clock was running out. I'm going to ask you to save further comment on that because we have a lot of questions as far as the stop issue. So we'll wait for a rebuttal, Mr. Solomon. Mr. Pesch, we get to turn to you. You have the floor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ryan Pesch. I represent the Commissioner of Public Safety, the respondent in this matter. I'm asking this court to affirm the district court's decision to sustain appellant's license revocation on both the stop issue and the additional test issue, because both of those issues are controlled by the district court's findings of fact, which this court does not disturb unless they're clearly erroneous. Here, the findings are supported by the record. They're supported both by the transcript and by the recording and the findings that the district court made go directly to the issues at hand. So to the extent that we're talking about what happens after an additional test is requested, I would argue those things are beyond the scope of what pertains to district court's findings. The district court found that no additional test was requested. The district court clearly found that an alternative test was requested. And the difference between those things, I think, is dispositive in this case, because an additional test does invoke some responsibility on the part of law enforcement, whereas an alternative test explicitly does not, according to case law. So to the extent that appellant was asking for an alternative test, that didn't impose any obligation on Trooper Vatsas, whereas an additional test request, which the district court didn't find was made, would have...
Mr. Pesch, stopping for a seatbelt violation, a primary offense versus a secondary offense. I remember when this was legislated and I kept thinking to myself, another basis to stop a vehicle for public safety reasons, or that was the argument in support of having these kind of things. Do you care to comment at all about the responsibility of peace officers in following what has been legislated versus having something more than a suspicion that there's a seatbelt violation to pull this fellow over? I mean, after all, we get down to where we're wondering, can you really see it or can you not? I used to think that as a trial court judge, when they'd talk about expired tabs and I'd say, wow, I'm old, but how can you see it? Do you have any comments on that?
Your Honor, I'm sure you'll be dissatisfied with my answer, but in those sorts of cases, we and appellate courts and district courts have been instructed that law enforcement have a great deal of training when it comes to looking for these sorts of violations, training that I don't have. So to the extent that I don't notice when someone isn't wearing a seatbelt, I can't say the same thing is true of law enforcement, where it's their job to ensure that people are driving safely. Here, the squad video, admittedly, it's not very clear. There's some graininess, some pixelation. Appellant did testify that his windows were tinted, but the trooper testified credibly that he saw that the appellant wasn't wearing his seatbelt. The district court credited that testimony. The squad video shows that when he walks up, the first thing he says is, "I saw you weren't wearing your seatbelt. Did you just put that on after I pulled you over?" And appellant gives some evasive answers. So to the extent that we're talking about whether he was or wasn't wearing a seatbelt and whether the trooper could see that, here it seems as though the trooper did in fact see it, because appellant was evasive when he was confronted with that issue. So to the extent that I can't see a seatbelt violation, here it seems like the trooper could, and that testimony is supported by the record and appellant's response on the video and his testimony. So while it may not be true in every case that a trooper can see a seatbelt, here I think that the facts show the trooper did in fact make that determination correctly, at least based on the evasive answers that he was provided when he confronted appellant on that issue. So I decline to offer an opinion on all seatbelt violations, but here I think that the district court was well within its discretion in crediting the trooper's testimony and upholding the stop.
Mr. Pesha, so, I'm going to jump you from the beginning as Judge Werke to the end. It strikes me as an unfortunate inconvenience that the recording ended. Now, I haven't seen any law that was cited by appellant that would make this an error in a civil implied consent proceeding. But my question is, was there some explanation to the court of why at that particular point? Because obviously then we would all listen to it, and either the judge was consistent with the record or not and didn't have to rely only on the credibility. But I'm assuming it plays a bit into the credibility that she might have been interested to know why so inconveniently at that location did the recording end. Was there any evidence? I didn't see anything. Was the judge made aware, perhaps off record or anything, explain to the judge about that?
Your Honor, I don't believe anything was made clear to the judge on why the recording ended where it does. I, like Mr. Solomon, wish we had more of a recording, because contrary to his assertion, I think that it would support my position that there was no request made. I think the idea that there should be some sort of inference drawn against respondent is incorrect, because we just don't know, according to the recording, what happened. But we do have the testimony of the trooper and the deputy that one, Trooper Vatsas, testified that no request was made, and Deputy Scissorlip testified that if a request had been made, it would be recorded in the jail notes. So while we ideally would have a recording of everything that happened, there wasn't an explanation provided. I would note that because the respondent is the Commissioner of Public Safety and not necessarily the prosecutor or on the criminal side, we don't necessarily have the same privity with law enforcement. We don't necessarily always have the same explanations given to us for why certain evidence isn't in the record. But here, that unfortunately, the recording ends where it does, and we're left with a credibility determination rather than a clear recording. Fortunately for me, the district court believed the witnesses that testified that appellant did not request an additional test. Appellant's testimony was kind of all over the place. If you read the transcript, he testifies that first that his request was for a secondary or for an alternative test. Then he says it's a secondary test. Then he says that the request was captured by the audio recording, and the audio recording clearly shows it's an alternative test and not an additional test. So to the extent that the court was making a credibility determination, there's simply no reason to conclude that the district court's determination was erroneous. And then I would also point to the fact that the appellant I guess I would just direct the court to the finding that petitioner admitted that his memory of the incident is not good. That's also supported by the transcript. Appellant testified that he didn't really remember the events because they happened a long time ago. It's also worth noting that he was impaired by alcohol at the time of the events, whereas the trooper and the deputy, while the deputy didn't necessarily remember exactly what had happened, the trooper had no issue recalling that no request was made. So resolving that credibility determination was not very difficult for the district court. And I think that any failure to have that whole process recorded shouldn't weigh against the respondent in this matter. Appellant has also pointed to the fact that there was no express credibility determination made with regard to appellant's testimony, but there was an express credibility determination made with regard to the trooper's testimony and the deputy's testimony. When those two things are in direct conflict, which they are here, this court will generally conclude logically that because they're inconsistent, the court will go with the one that is consistent with the findings. Here, the district court found that there was no additional test requested. So it's only logical to conclude that it rejected petitioner's testimony or appellant's testimony. Also, there's a pretty big difference between someone believing they had requested an additional test versus actually having requested an additional test, to the extent that appellant points to the district court's finding number 45, that he believed he made a request that is directly overruled and inconsistent with the deputy and the trooper's testimony that no request was made and the district court's finding on that issue. So I think the court has understood the issues very well. Judge Rodenberg pointed out that these findings are dispositive on the issue of whether or not an additional test was requested. And I would just ask the court to affirm the district court when it sustained the revocation of appellant's license, unless there are any further questions from the panel.
It appears not, Mr. Pesch. Thank you. Mr. Solomon, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. First of all, Robert Larson did testify that he requested an additional test. The district court did not make a finding regarding that. Please look at lines 12 through 14 on page 16 of the transcript. Trooper Vatsas said, quote, "I believe that either the seatbelt was not in use at all or it was being improperly worn," close quote. And also finding of fact number 15 of the district court's order. Trooper Vatsas did not know that Robert Larson was not wearing the seatbelt. The trooper did not have certainty as to that fact. I think what the point before I was to ask a question is that when the trooper was meeting Robert Larson in his vehicle, the trooper had to look to his left into the sun to detect that Robert Larson was not wearing a seatbelt. The commissioner asserts in his brief that Robert Larson has not cited to any legal authority for his assertion that it's not possible for Trooper Vatsas, possible that Trooper Vatsas observed Robert Larson well enough to determine that he was not wearing a seatbelt. The appellate court can use common sense in place of legal authority. Trooper Vatsas testified that he was traveling at about 25 miles per hour, and Robert Larson was traveling at about 25 miles per hour when the two vehicles met. Trooper Vatsas testified that he made his observation of no seatbelt use through the driver's side window of Robert Vatsas, Robert Larson's vehicle. In fact, also Trooper Vatsas incorrectly testifies that there was no tint on the driver's side, on the windows on the side of that vehicle. That vehicle is tinted on those sides. There was testimony by Robert Larson to that effect. And then Trooper Vatsas was also looking through his driver's side window at the time that the sun was shining in his eyes, and he turns his head to the left.
Just a minute, I have a question, Mr. Solomon. Is there evidence other than the appellant's testimony that the windows are tinted? For example, is there a picture or a video or a lapel video or something that shows it that I could go see?
There is not. State versus Polar, 935 Northwest 2D, is distinguishable from the case at bar because Officer Matthew Giese stopped James Polar because of a cracked windshield, and it appeared to that James Polar was not wearing a seatbelt. In the case at bar, Trooper Vatsas did not stop Robert Larson because of a cracked windshield. Also, Trooper Vatsas did not know that Robert Larson was not wearing a seatbelt. In this sense, State versus Polar is similar to the case at bar. Trooper Vatsas's mistake regarding Robert Larson not wearing a seatbelt was unreasonable. Trooper Vatsas had a mere undeveloped hunch that Robert Larson was not wearing a seatbelt. And Trooper Vatsas used that hunch as a pretext for conducting a broader investigation into whether Robert Larson was drinking and driving. That's all I have, Your Honor.
Mr. Solomon and Mr. Pesh for appearing today on our Zoom platform. Matters are deemed submitted, which means a decision will be issued by this court within the statutory timeframe. Thank you for appearing today.
Thank you.